Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This is Greg Olson, inviting you to check out my new Blue Wire podcast, TE1, where I interview tight ends throughout the history of the NFL who have helped revolutionize the position. TE1 is presented by the Chevy Silverado. The Silverado is all about grit. It's strong and dependable, exactly like playing tight end. Just like the incredible players we sit down with on the podcast, the Chevy Silverado is in a league of its own. Strong, advanced, and dependable. Download TE1 today, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to Here's Where It Went Wrong, the podcast where every episode we sit down with one of our favorite comedians to talk about a topic they could not love more, and then exclusively discuss the worst parts of it. I am here, as always, with my partner, Wen Powers, who had his birthday yesterday. Wen, how are you doing? Happy birthday.
I'm 1 year closer to death, and I couldn't be happier about it.
There we go. Perfect. Just what we're looking for. So you said you had a little, you know, I mean, we're quarantined, birthday quarantines, getting creative. But you have a wife. You get to live with her. So
yeah, no, she went right there. She went like completely above and beyond. She woke me up and was like, hey, come check this out. And she presented me with a video of all of my friends and family wishing me happy birthday. And like it was like a 12-minute video, like set to music and everything. Like she had production value involved. And it was the nicest thing anyone has ever done for me, and also throwing the gauntlet on all birthdays until we die.
That is incredibly sweet, and also I cannot imagine having 12 minutes of friends. That is a lot of happy birthdays. That is so nice.
Well, it kept kind of going back to like my sisters who would like mess up, and
it was
like
four guys over and over again.
there's a few runners in there where like go back to somebody who'd be like, wait, I thought of something else to say.
And she had the editing skills necessary to put that together. That is fantastic. Well, happy birthday. I'm glad we're recording now. We are, you know, getting closer to October, which is going to start just a slew of Halloween episodes, which I think is going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, I'm so excited.
And we are here with our wonderful guest, a comedian who I've had the pleasure of working with before on Cabin Fever Comedy. And she has been funny every single time I've talked to her. Pallavi Gunnilan, thank you so much for being on.
Hi, thank you for having me. And Wen, I totally did that for my boyfriend one time too. I made a huge like scavenger hunt for him all day with all my friends, and then it ended with like a video of his like parents and his grandparents, and I looked at him and he never fucking cried, and I'm really upset about it.
I cried.
I was like, the one thing, I know this is the only thing that I could ever get him to cry, and he was just like, what?
Wow. I'll be honest. I full on like turned away because she was filming my reaction to like show like my parents and everything. And the second my grandparents came on screen, I was just a mess. It was
I literally was like staring at him when his grandparents who don't speak English were just like, we're proud of you. And he didn't do shit. And I was like, this is not going to end well.
Oh, no.
And it didn't. But it's okay. But I'm glad you cried. That's good, human.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no. Well, I mean, it's not that hard of a feat. Just, like, play a somewhat
like Field of Dreams every single
father
time.
And son things make me... I have a great relationship with my dad, but any father and son media makes me cry immediately.
How does he feel about that? if he's like, what did I do wrong? Why are you crying about this?
Stop. I love you. We love each other.
He's like at a Sizzler with you. He's like, we're a good parents.
Cats in the Cradle comes on and I'm just sobbing. And he's like, I was around.
You're like bad at baseball. And he's like, I taught you better than this. I swear.
Oh, I'm very bad at baseball. And he taught me way better than this. I was telling you before we started this chat, I majored in musical theater.
Yep.
And God bless the man. He was never ready for that life, but he adapted to it as best he could.
Couldn't you act like you were good at sports, son? That's awesome. Well, happy birthday.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Well, and speaking of Wen's major here, this is our first science history episode, which I'm so excited to have Pallavi on for. Because she has the science background in biomedical engineering, right?
Yeah. Yep. I quit my PhD in December, right before quarantine, because this is stable.
Well, so how did that happen? How did you go from biomedical engineering to stand-up?
I basically started working in labs in seventh grade because a club, like this biotech center director, came to our like math engineering science association club. And then I was like, I'm going to need her contact information for an internship. And I did that. And I was very like, I think until college when it kind of broke me, because I went to a really hard college, I was very like motivated in science and engineering. And I still was after I did a master's. And then I like got a job and worked in industry. And then I wanted to rebrand and do more computational stuff rather than working in like a wet lab. And so I applied for PhD programs and I decided to go to USC. And then I started comedy. In 2016 is when I moved to LA and started my PhD. And I did my first open mic, and that was in August. And I did my first open mic in January. I was one of those like New Year's comedians who was like, oh, I got to do this or whatever.
Yeah,
they're
really
fucking annoying.
It's on the list. I got to do it.
Yeah. But the reason that I did that was because my boyfriend at the time was doing improv, and it never occurred to me that you could just do comedy. Like I had done like sketches and dumb shit in college, but I never like realized that you could do it. And then once he started doing improv, I was like, oh, I want to do it. But then I saw like the timing and the schedule and the cost of improv is like a lot. And then also like, I don't know, being dependent on other people. But for some reason, I was like, hey, I'm going to go. We went to a Sketchfest party because he got into SF Sketchfest. And I met all of these like incredible comedians because I was such a fucking comedy nerd. I was listening to all the podcasts and everything. Yeah. And then I was like, I met like Thomas Middleditch, Ron Funches. I knew where these like what cities these guys came out of. I like knew everything about them. And I was like, ugh. And then I was like, I got to do it. And I had seen a friend do an open mic too. And I think that encouraged me because I was like, I could do that. And then the next day, so I talked to local stand-ups in SF. And then the next day I went and I did my first open mic. And then I came back to the VIP party and I got to talk to like John Hodgman about my first open mic ever. And then I didn't have time. And then like Paul F. Tompkins was there. And like the night before Todd Barry had roasted me and I was like, this is going to put me into stand up. It was like a whole thing. It took me like a few months and then I did another open mic in a few months and I did another open mic because I had work and like roommate issues and relationship issues and all this stuff. And then I was like, when I go to LA, I'm going to go hard. And then that's like when I did, when I moved to LA and within like 5 days, I was like hitting mics every night and stuff. So that was
incredible.
Dope. Yeah. It was really cool. One thing that I thought was really interesting was I always wanted to do like creative projects with my boyfriend. I was always like, let's make vines together. I don't know. I'm like not a normal girlfriend, but like, I was like, I want to do like, or like, let's even like the romantic stuff. I was like, let's write like letters that are stories or something, you know, because we were long distance for a while. And he like, it was so hard to get him to do anything with me. And then with stand up, he was like, this could be our thing. I'm going to come with you. And I was like, no,
this is my thing.
You're not coming. And like, you're just not. And he was like, what? And I was like, you're not. I don't know what in me was like, you can't come to this open mic. And I was like, shut it down. And I'm really glad I did that because it felt very like my thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. No,
Definitely. Definitely like just keep it yours and like in your own like world in your own area. I get it.
Yeah. And I think that, like, kind of was the beginning of my, like, liberation from being a clingy bitch. Like, just becoming independent. Like, comedy really helped me find my cunt voice, you know?
It just... Oh, totally. It was comedy and him not fucking crying at that amazing video.
Son of a bitch. But I ended up quitting my PhD. It took me like a year and a half to come to terms with the fact that I just like was saying yes to every podcast and sketch and every open mic and like really not getting my work done. And it was like way too hard to wake up in the mornings after being out at for stand up at like 2 a.m. and having to like go to professors' meetings. And it was such a big part of my identity. It felt like the biggest breakup of my life. But then now I'm working on a ventilator project, so I'm like volunteering. So I'm just like sucked back into this shit. And my dad's like, "Oh, but you're not just doing stand up anymore." Like after coming out to him as a comedian, after going through that whole fucking process and like him and getting my parents to be supportive and everything, which they like they were at eventually. Now they're like, "But she's engineering again." We knew it would never leave her.
Well,
I was like, damn it, Dad.
This was a fantastic project, though. This is Respira Works, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah. So back in March of 2020, which was 6 years ago, we...
Truly
6 years ago. I was invited to this Slack group. Slack is the bane of everyone's existence right now. And it was like 15,000 volunteer engineers, scientists, et cetera. And they were trying to figure out something to do for the pandemic. And then there were all these offshoots of groups from it, like people making ventilators, trying to distribute masks and PPE and all of this other stuff. And I found a PPE group. And then I also found that I got recruited into this ventilator group. And the ventilator group ended up being more interesting for me of a project, although the PPE group did really great things. But it's a group. We're trying to build a fully featured ventilator that is affordable for people in developing countries. We're hoping to sell it to have our partners who are manufacturers sell it for like around $2,000, $2,500, whereas other ventilators that have these features are like $5,000, $10,000. So just to make it more affordable, but also to kind of move around the supply chain that most ventilators in the U.S. and in other countries require so that we're not dependent on those medical device supply chains. So we like go to like refrigeration companies and automobile companies for a lot of the parts that are required for the ventilator. But the big thing, because it takes a long time. It's like, it's several months into the pandemic and we're not there like regulatory wise. But the big thing about it that I love is that it's all volunteer. And so everybody is like really passionate about it. And also like the most fucking competent team of scientists and engineers and people I've ever worked with. And then also we're all like, we're doing this open source so that we can fuck up the medical device industry and like find a pathway through regulatory to make these medical devices like more affordable overall. So it's like we're trying to like forge a new path that lasts beyond this pandemic and lasts beyond this project and product. And that's what's exciting me. I'm like, oh man, if we can like figure out a way to make this work and then have this like roadmap for people or this guide for people to just like build shit in their rooms and then like allow anyone to manufacture it, then that'll like reduce the cost of medical devices worldwide, hopefully.
That would be absolutely amazing. And you're looking for volunteers, right? So if anybody's available, have any sort of specialty involved in this, Respira Works, absolutely reach out. They can use some help. I remember Pallavi mentioning this, like as soon as the pandemic started, you guys were on top of it and working. It was fantastic. And it seems like it's just grown bigger and better since then.
Yeah, it's super fun.
Quick show note. We should not have guests who are this much better people than we are.
Listen, I'll tell you about the people I'm planning on murdering and then we'll
Perfect.
Be even.
Okay. But before that, you've actually got another charity project, right?
It's not like, I don't know if I'd call it charity. It's just a thing that I'm doing, but it is also volunteer based. I send out a mailing list, like now it's once a week. And I call it Supporting Black Lives. And it's just with like news and petitions and donations and like black businesses and social media accounts and activists to follow. And like, and then I have a Google Drive that like keeps track of all that stuff and it helps with like figuring out what protests to go to and stuff like that. And then in addition to that, recently, because of friends like Andrew who like retweeted me, I just was like, hey, I'll give free tutoring hours, because that's what I do to make money now, to any Black students who are struggling with, like, science and math and anything else I can tutor in. And then all these fucking Twitter accounts retweeted me, and then it went, like, mini viral, and then I had a bunch of, like, people messaging me not only to get lessons but also to be tutors. So now I think I'm in the process of matching. We matched, like, I think at this point I've matched like 15, and I have like 15 more students to go. So like we're going to have around like 30 students right now that are getting matched for free tutoring. And I could also use volunteers for that. It's like elementary, middle school, high school. It's pretty okay stuff. If anybody, it's all online.
That is
too.
Absolutely fantastic.
That's absolutely incredible. If you do have, guys, if you're listening, if you do have some expertise, please reach out. We're definitely going to have the handle and in the yes. show notes so that you can reach out and let's change some lives. That's awesome. That's amazing.
Also for the Respira Work stuff, you don't have to be an engineer or scientist. Like, we have fundraising people, we have social media people, we have like people helping with organizations. So anything helps.
That is fantastic. So Pallavi doing a ton of good, and us just you know, kind of pretending we're a part of it. I am so glad to almost be able to help.
No. Remember how many lives we changed with our Batman and Robin was bad episode? That was
maybe that would help a generation of young white men move life differently. Maybe they're like, oh, I'm not owed sex. Maybe that's the benefit of that episode.
Well, so yeah, so you're in comedy full time, but have gone back to this just enough to make your parents proud / anxious, but are helping the world. That is fantastic.
Yeah.
And yeah, thank you so much for coming
on. I think I told you that we got like a letter from Elizabeth Warren, and I sent it to my mom, and her response was okay. But it's only because parents don't know, I think. I don't know.
No, my parents are just bad at texting, like, regardless. They don't understand that, like, 9 exclamation points is, like, the bare minimum you need to, like, say that you're happy about something. So, like, there are so many times where, like, I'll get a text from my mom and it just sounds like she's ghosting.
That's great. My mom does a thing where she, like, she'll post pictures of, like, the backyard, and it's, like, way too many pictures, and she'll be like, this is our yard in winter, and like, or she'll post, like, her food, which she's a really great cook, and she'll be like, I made idlis again, enjoy, and it's like, mom, I physically can't enjoy them. This is on Facebook.
That's not how food works.
Yeah.
Well, so because we have Pallavi as our fantastic guest, we asked her to pick a topic, as she always do. And again, she picked this great science history topic. And we're going to start with the good, as we always do.
You've counted on restaurants. Now they're counting on you. And while their dining rooms may be closed, they're still open for delivery with DoorDash. DoorDash is the app that brings you the food you're craving right to your door. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door with the new contactless delivery drop-off setting. Choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, and the Cheesecake Factory. Many of your favorite local restaurants are still open for delivery, too. Just open the DoorDash app, select your favorite local spot, and your food is on its way. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code BLUEWIRE. That's $5 off and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code BLUEWIRE. Don't forget, that's code BLUEWIRE for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. The wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Science history topic, and we're going to start with the good, as we always do, which is the peer review process for scientific journals, which is a system we really do believe in. It's not flawless, but it's been effective. Can you walk us through that a little bit?
Yeah. Basically, scientists will have a hypothesis, an experiment that they want to do to test that hypothesis, and they do so, and they keep track of all the methodology and the materials used and the data, and then they form conclusions based on this, and they write up an article that's then published in a scientific journal, and depending on the reputation of the scientific journal, other scientists build on this body of knowledge. That's what we always talk about in science, is a body of knowledge in a particular topic. And the way that that's done is through peer review, meaning that individuals in the field who are experts in that particular area would review the article before it's published and then provide edits that need to be done. And those edits can be include, your experiment isn't rigorous enough, or you need to expand to multiple experiments, or this conclusion is too far off from your data to draw, or you just need to add more information in like the introduction or the background or whatever. There are all these different levels of journals, and then these journals are graded based on how many citations they receive, meaning how many times they're used in other articles, etc., and that kind of increases the reputation of these journals. So when you publish, you try to aim for journals with a higher impact factor, an IF factor, and as a result, you'll get like more rigorous review. So it's like the honor code. It's like us checking each other and making sure that what we're publishing is like scientifically accurate and true to the scientific method.
This was a great explanation. And pretty much everyone involved in this recognizes the importance of the field. This is an opportunity to advance everyone's work. This is not, hey, I did this interesting thing and this is the end of the story. You know, this research is done because it's going to be built off of, which means that everyone that's involved in this peer review is getting inside information, able to share their own information. As you discussed the multiple peer review process, there are, of course, basically pay-to-play journals, ones that you get in,
yeah.
But those are understood by the community to not be relevant.
Sometimes there are issues with there's issues with accessibility. And so like there's pay to play, which a lot of people disagree with. There's also journals that have high impact factors based on like influence citations and stuff. But for the most part, though, this is like the only method that we have for holding each other accountable. Right. Like it's the only way to make sure, because like the only, you can't have laymen read. And by laymen, I mean all you losers who don't know science.
That'll be the musical theater major.
The musical
right here.
Theater majors. We can't regular people can't read it's so hard to read these papers and understand like the process of them. So it is like the best method that we have so far.
And especially because science as a whole, obviously each field varies, but generally it is the most rigorous in terms of requirements to have something be considered publishable, from recording of data to the overall process. I mean, we all remember our lab reports.
Yes, yes. We all remember our lab reports that we all did.
Well...
So, yes, I was pre-med before this. I did not get as far as Pallavi before.
Did you, when you were pre-med, what was your other major? Like, because you can't just be pre-med.
No, I was a bio major.
Classic.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking between bio and psych. But no, so what happened with me was, and Wen already knows this, but I spent most of my life disabled between...
What?
Yeah, is this going to be...
I don't know you at all, and I thought I knew you better than Wen.
So...
I barely know you, Andrew. What the fuck?
Yeah, no, I've spent most of my life between housebound and bedridden. And if this is too much, just guys laugh at the end of this so the audience knows it's cool.
No.
Oh, I'm laughing already. This is hilarious. So,
listen,
keep going.
I'm not trying to treat you like a victim, okay?
Yeah.
You will earn your laughs.
No, about 6 years ago, I started getting better.
Can I ask what it was?
Yeah, myalgic encephalomyelitis, ME, to make it easy.
That's why you're so funny. Jesus Christ.
That is exactly how this happened. So yeah, I started getting a bit better, and you have to, you know, about a year of building up strength, because first you have to learn to be able to, you know, walk past your kitchen. And then about a year and a half later, I started taking classes, just a couple at a time, one, then two. And then I relapsed, not to where I was, but where I am now, where, you know, going out once a week or so. But yeah, that was, I mean, I had already, when I started going to school, I also got well enough to write, because I couldn't write most of the years. All of this just lived in my head. So I'd been writing a little bit and then I relapsed. And obviously that was a big hit. And I thought, well, I don't want to be sad. I guess I got to be funny. and that was basically yeah. it. So I had been writing. I started writing more and more to occupy my time. Then, you know, basically, all right, you can go out once a month. Better make sure you're getting stage time when you do it.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was my transition from from pre-med
to
comedy.
Like all other stand-up comedians, chose stage time instead of sex when you had the opportunity.
I mean, I appreciate you assuming sex would have been an option otherwise.
Listen, buddy, I don't know. I'm not here to judge. I'm looking at my own sex life worried about it.
But yeah, so I mean, when did I talk? We should try and talk about our own personalized work and let you guys get to know us a bit. So yeah, that is my backstory of how I went from a supposed
bomb-ass origin story.
Thank you.
I mean, not great for you, but great for me to hear. Very yeah. inspiring. Look, I'm taking this without any of the difficulty of having lived that experience and just riding with it, you know?
Look.
Yeah, as a narrative, it's great. It. It's great. So sorry it happened to you. But as a book, this is fantastic. Yeah,
where is the book, Andrew? We're waiting.
I know. Now, before it could be like, you know what? I'm sick. I can't write. Now it's my job to write. How am I not profiting off of this? But yeah, so there you go, audience, too. That's a bit of my backstory. And next time we're going to cover when. I don't know what his trauma is, but we're going to find out for you guys.
I can see it in his eyes already. It's got to be deeper than his father. Yeah. We know that for sure.
My dad, who I have a great relationship with, I cannot stop crying.
See, I was going to say, you can't see it, but he's crying right now. A single tear is rolling down his face.
All right, so this is our origin stories, as well as the positive in the peer review process. But the show, of course, is Here's Where It Went Wrong, which means we have to discuss where it went wrong. And there have been a couple big issues, but the one we decided on was the Yoshiki Sasai scandal, which this happened in 2014. Sasai worked with Obakata at the Riken Center. And Obakata was his junior, about 30 years. He was a senior at the facility, or at least her senior. A bit of a mentor to her. They were working on stimulus-triggered acquisition of pluripotency, or STAP, which is complicated science, but basically they're exposing normal cells to a stress. In this case, it was basically a form of citric acid, which would give rise to pluripotent stem cells. So turning regular cells into stem cells, and stem cells can, of course, turn into any cell, or basically any cell.
We talking pulp or no pulp on that?
This was actually where the big scandal was. They used pulp. Everyone rejected it.
I was trying to like make sense of this because I personally am dumb. So I was like reading all these articles and it wasn't making any sense to me. And I was like, and like, they're like, oh yeah, you put the cell in a stressor and that makes it stem cells, and stem cells can be anything. And I was like, great. So it's like bullying someone to become what you
yes!
want them to be.
It's like Andrew's origin story.
This is how we all became comedians.
He was comedians. Put under extreme stress and now he's famous.
So yeah, apparently you create stem cells the exact same way you create comedians. Is the moral of this story.
But not fucking
Well, so here's what happened. Obakata is the lead author. Sasai is a co-author. Sasai, by the way, is successful enough that his name on a paper carries weight. If he's working at the facility, if he's consulted a bit on the paper, she wants to get his name on it. And then it turns out Obakata had faked her data. This was made. Nobody has been able to recreate these results. This was 2014. It is still nobody has been able to recreate the results. There were some specious photos that one turned out to be from a completely different experiment. That the other one that appeared to be have some information posted from a different photo. They've eventually conclude that Obakata faked this data, and Sasai takes the heat.
I remember when this happened in 2014, because me and my peers, at that point I was in my master's program, and we were talking about this happening, and I looked at the figures and I was like, because it was in Nature,
right?
And Nature has a huge impact factor. It's one of like the best journals. And we were looking at the figures and we were like, this one just seems upside down. Like it just,
yes.
It just like, I don't think that's actually right. But it was like, it was one of those things where we were like, how the fuck did this get through? Like, it didn't make any sense. But then, like, Andrew and I were looking at the list because we were, like, confused about which case this was. And we were looking at the list of all of the retractions and stuff. And it's, like, way too long.
It is. And it's so long. And part of the issue, I think, was that Sasai said, look, I worked on this paper. He's trying to be upfront about this. He said, there are things here that seem like they could only have happened if STAP worked. Obakata says, oh, I don't know what happened. You guys are wrong, probably. That was basically it. She said, maybe I used the wrong photo. And it's like, well, cool. You changed the caption on the photo. You were looking right at it.
Yeah, there were ones that were like, this is this cell, and it was entirely a different cell.
Exactly.
And it's hard. I don't know. It's hard because, like, there definitely are some things in peer review where you can't, like, you're not in the room with the scientist. You have to assume that they did the things they said they were going to do. So, like, the rigor that you're checking for in the paper is just, like, the evidence that is there. And, like, doesn't make logical sense progressing. But those pictures were crazy.
They were
wild.
No, that's exactly what happened. And in fact, why Sasai took so much of the blame, Obakata was actually cited for this. You know, they claim that she falsified data. Sasai, he was not cited in any way, or censured in any way. There wasn't a punishment per se, except for the fact that they said it was your job to do better. It was your job to oversee these results and confirm they were correct. And you didn't do this. And he took heat in the media for months to the point where he did actually commit suicide, which is a huge dramatic leap from what this podcast normally is. And Pallavi told me this topic and I started looking into it and I thought, this is September. This is Suicide Prevention Month. And we have a platform. We want this to be funny. We want to entertain you guys. But also, if people are listening, I think it's important to talk about. And I also think it's okay to be funny and then be serious and then be funny again, because this is one that makes people deeply uncomfortable to talk about. And I think doing in a scenario like this makes it a bit easier. Communication is the only way to help. If you are in need, suicidepreventionlifeline.org is a wonderful service. They offer 24/7 assistance to people in need. I realize this is a big topic for a lot of people, so we're going to get to how this was screwed up and why some of this was entertaining, but this part was not. This part was very serious, and Sasai took the heat so much so that he couldn't get past it.
I also want to say, like, I think that we talk about comedians being, like, depressed and having mental health issues and stuff a lot, but I went to a college where this was a huge issue and we did have a number of suicides. And I think because people think that scientists and engineers have their shit together and that they're so, I guess, like, I don't know, like, on top of things and organized and don't outwardly show that they have these issues, it's really, like, easy to not look for it or to assume that they're doing fine. But I mean, scientists and engineers and people who are that type of type A person are ones that can be most effective at doing it and getting away with, you know, like, not asking for help and stuff. So that's, like, that's also a topic that's close to my heart.
Absolutely, because it's also a field with people that are highly motivated and put the most pressure on themselves. And it's an overwhelming industry. In fact, in a lot of my notes about this, one of the things to discuss was that just one of the most common phrases is publish or perish, that you have to, it's understood that you just have to make this happen, which is why this does happen occasionally, because you've got to get your stuff out there. And for a lot of people, this pressure is too much. For Sasai, it was. For Obakata, who was really the one that was behind most of this, she's managed to do fairly well for herself after this. That is the most serious part of this podcast, but we're going to get on to the rest of this just absolutely absurd situation, because Obakata is basically out of science at this point. And
which I see as a reward.
She went into stand-up comedy.
Which is a punishment for us.
But no, Obakata becomes an author telling her side of the story. And by the way, when the STAP method is developed, everyone else, Sasai included, is saying Obakata did it. They're giving her the credit, or they're saying there were two other co-authors. But Obakata is saying, I discovered this. And then when this happened, and she writes her book, she blames someone else for not overseeing the data well enough and for messing up her photos. And this becomes a number one bestseller in Japan, which makes me so angry.
What if the book was just one stolen speech from Michelle Obama? We were like, wait a minute, how did this pass us?
And by the way, Obakata was allowed to, when this, there is a rigorous process to prove this, that Riken is overseeing. Obakata was allowed to join Riken's efforts to try and prove her results. She is never able to do it, and has eventually resigned from Riken.
She was just never able to correctly bully cells into becoming stem cells. Since
she called them pussies for hours. Nothing.
Why aren't you an ear yet? I don't understand stem cells.
By the way, one of the co-authors of this paper was the guy that put the ear on the mouse at Harvard.
Oh, whoa, guess I'm not he that does dumb, understand. Am I?
Bring it full circle.
Can the intro to your podcast just be Wen yelling, guess I'm not that dumb, am I? Just every time.
It's a running theme. Look, sometimes we do sports episodes, and like then I'm like,
Wen
then
kills
I'm
it.
The genius in the room. But when we're talking about actual intellect, yeah, I take the back seat. I surrender the platform a little bit.
That we have a variety of skills, and I think one of Wen's is underplaying how smart he is, so he can play the idiot to this trio. But, so yeah, this is an absolutely insane story. As Paulie said, this is big enough that even if you are not working in stem cell research, you heard about this. If you're in the science, you heard about this.
What is wild to me is that there's someone I know that's like Obokata. Like there is someone I know who is still in science. And like I think there are, like I've heard, so that was a personal experience with me, and then I have a friend who had another personal experience with someone else. There are these people who, like, I don't know why they're in science, but they're only there for the prestige.
Yeah.
And they're very rare. They're very rare people, but they don't care about their. I don't know if it's like discriminatory to say like sociopath, but like it's I guess I don't know, you can cut that out, but it's like they're people who like don't care about getting, like they don't have empathy, and they are just they have the goal of publishing and they don't care about the research itself. And most of the field cares so much about the research to the point where they're like peer reviewing for free, right? They're like,
yeah,
they just put in like a lot of work to make sure that science is rigorous. And like graduate students don't get paid much. We're not like allowed to because of federal law or whatever. But
boo,
or like the NIH standards. Or I don't know what it is. But yeah. So it's like most people are like putting in so many hours to make sure that their research is well done and like and you know rigorous and that they're considering everything. And it's honor code based in terms of like them holding themselves accountable in the process of it. And then there are like these individuals,
yeah,
who you're like, why are you, go be a fucking actor if you're going to be this cutthroat about it. Like, why are you here? There were people in my graduate school program who cheated in the easiest classes. And I was like, your parents don't give a shit about your grades anymore. Like, you're not, this is for science. What are you
right.
doing?
I mean, at a certain point, like, it's gotta be like, kind of like a god complex. Cause like, they can't recreate it. She, like, you have to know that they're not going to be able to recreate your thing. You did not actually change the world. What you want is for everyone to think of you as someone who changed the world.
You want the fame of that published.
Exactly.
Absolutely. And in fact, when this came out, people are, when the immediate response before it broke that it was a lie, which, by the way, people started commenting on this looking wrong a week after it was published. But before that really broke, people were saying, this is going to change textbooks. This is going to change what we know about science.
Yeah.
And speaking to what Pallavi said, 87% of scientific papers are published by 1% of scientists, either authored or co-authored. This
are you
is...
good, are you about to Bernie us? You're like, it's the 1%. Publishing 87%.
But some of these are because they're doing fantastic research. Some of them, they're on it. They're so involved in their lab, they can put their name on a lot of papers, which, yeah, is a vanity thing, but also they put the work in. But for a lot of these people, it's like, look, this is how they're going to get paid. And in fact, a lot of universities police themselves, which has been shown not to work in cases of fraud.
Well, police in any situation don't work. So.
I know that's really
it. Is not a thing.
But yeah, in cases of scientific fraud, most of the universities, it hurts reputation. They don't want it to happen. The U.S. has the ORI, the Office of Research Integrity, which oversees these. But in a 2017 study found that of the 284 academics who were found by ORI to have committed research misconduct, which, by the way, they don't hand out regularly. Most of the time, they label it questionable research practices, which means nothing happens. You did something wrong. Don't worry about it. Of these 284 found to have committed research misconduct, nearly half continued to receive federal funding for more than $123 million. If all you care about is the fame and money, lying works. The problem is that everyone else in science takes it so seriously, because that's why you got into this, is to make a difference.
And they're not dumb. Like,
right.
Scientists are not. The nature thing was like, it was a huge standout because it was such an, it felt like such an exceptional case, you know, like
right.
for that.
Because how did it slip through the cracks was the big issue. Normally this system really does work well. When it doesn't, it's not a journal as big as Nature. You know, they published something. Nobody really heard about it. It was enough that they could request a grant. But for something to get by Nature was a big deal.
Yeah, because that isn't in one of the open access ones that you like pay for to distribute your work. There, it's not one of those like preprint ones where they do it before the review and then print it after the review. Nature is like both good and bad, a gatekeeper.
Yeah.
I personally think everything should be open access and everybody
yes,
should
absolutely.
Like
it
it's you know
sense.
But it does, but like all of these are so profit driven, all of these journals, that it's hard to like the incentive for publishing good work in an open access format is like it's like everything right now, it's fucked up. But I think like generally peer review is really good for communication. It's really good for rigor. And then you have these cases where people just want, I don't think people understand the prestige within science. Like there's hierarchies. I remember in college, it was like mathematicians are considered the smartest, which is not a true thing. They just like had the least applicable skills. So people were like, they're always thinking things. And then it's like theoretical physicists and then applied physicists. And then like biologists were like bottom of the barrel because they actually help people, you know. And there's like prestige associated with it, so it's like the more you publish in a certain field or a certain journal or you know like whatever, the more prestige, the more like respect you get. Like it's kind of the thing of like, oh, like I slept the least last night, so like I'm doing the best, I'm like the coolest person. It's like it's that thing of like I've been grinding the hardest. And that, and because of that, people go for like these big gets rather than publishing like more cumulative stuff, like negative results and like other things. They go for these like big projects and big headline making, event or experiments, right?
I do appreciate you putting it in terms of just like, if you get it in Nature, the big name, it's like sleeping with a celebrity. Whereas if you're doing it in one of those magazines you gotta pay for, it's...
Yeah. Well,
but this is not at all a scientific example, but it's just a story that I happen to love. We all remember Spartacus, not personally, but, you know, the deal.
Speak for yourself, Andrew.
Yeah. I remember Spartacus. Thank you very much.
Spartacus, this escaped gladiator, supposed to just be like this gladiator. This is one guy. He got off on his own. He starts amassing slaves to join this cause. And this would have been fine. They would have been able to quell it pretty easily, except generals got to choose their own causes. They got to decide what campaigns they wanted to go on. And there was absolutely no glory in capturing slaves. They let this go until he's amassed a 25,000 person army. We're just going to cut this story. This has absolutely no relevance.
No, keep going. Keep going. No, we're keeping it in.
Come on.
We're keeping it in.
Fuck it. We'll do it live.
We're doing it live.
So look, the goal is here. There's things that can make a difference that you can get in them early.
Slaves. Andrew is suggesting
that is
everyone
not at all
amass
the message
slaves.
Of Andrew
that
knows,
is the title
response.
Of this episode.
It is.
Everyone should be amassing
slavery
like,
even
better.
Oh my God. This is all right. I need to craft my messages far better than this in the future. Next episode, we're discussing Spartacus and where it went wrong, which is Nick talking about.
No, we're discussing your Spartacus story and
yeah,
where
that's it.
Wrong.
That's where it hits.
Oh my God, you guys have to do a review of an episode for like an anniversary episode.
That would actually
be
incredible.
Where it went wrong.
Remember right, when we were a movie podcast?
Oh my God. Yeah. Those first two episodes.
I always bring in like the worst topic, like the most controversial or like upsetting topics to different podcasts. They're like, we're going to talk about our favorite animals. And I'm like, what about police brutality dogs? Like, I literally did that on an episode of a podcast.
Oh my God. All right. All right. So the message here was that this ability for those that are already successful to choose their own cases here has made it, it's just, it builds upon itself, that there's a lot of stuff that needs tending that does not get tended to. And ultimately, everyone is fighting for these few spots instead of taking care of the stuff that needs to be taken care of.
And people who have influence in certain fields will, like, if they're reviewers, they'll demand that their papers be cited by the authors of another paper, or they'll demand a certain technique that they use that's also, like, a preference or maybe not as objective. It's still a it's still a scientific method, but it's one that they want to push, or like a material or whatever. And so they'll, like, a lot of the reviews could be like preferential edits. Like, it's things that don't necessarily need to be included, but it's because that reviewer does it in their lab, so they think it's like the best way to do it. Or like projects that are latched onto because they've invested too much time and energy in that, like, area or whatever.
Absolutely.
So it's like ego. A lot of it can be ego.
Well, yeah, I feel like so much of this is like, you want to put out things that are positive. So, like, everyone is kind of going to try to bend towards, let's make this work. Especially with big projects
like
this.
Any relationship. It's like, let's not give up. Let's hold on until it falls apart publicly.
Yeah. This picture is not what you think it is.
Well, and in fact, the questionable research practices, this label that gets slapped on when they don't want to call it actual fraud. One of the biggest ones is publication bias, where journals are favoring publishing positive results, which I get it. You want to read about the big success story, but it's not necessarily the most relevant.
Christmas newsletter, you know, sometimes you got to talk about the divorce. You got to talk about it.
Yeah, like, nobody wants to be the magazine that's just like, no, we're not going to cure this disease. It's actually impossible. Everyone wants, like, no, we've put ears on rats now. Like, we're changing the world.
Why does everyone want rats to hear better so bad? do they want us to just make sure that they don't steal our pizza? Like, give it back.
but actually, to show the depth of this, it was that researcher in, was it 2015 or 2017? Where using these techniques, he largely used p-hacking, which is where basically you're playing with the data until they reach significance thresholds to allow it to be published. So it's, again, questionable.
Yeah, data analysis. Data analysis is a big one.
It is. It's huge. In 2015, John Bohannon proved how this could be done by setting up a study that led to results that showed chocolate could lead to weight loss. And
is that where all the articles got it from?
It is, actually.
All those fucking articles.
It was played on major news networks. It was played everywhere. Chocolate can lead to weight loss. And he then released a thing saying, cool, none of this is true. This was to prove the flaw in the system, but it's still being reported on.
But people still report on it. This is another thing that really bothers me, is because we have some, I think now it's getting a little bit better with the political situation, but we have a lot of scientists who are so deep into their research, and then they publish, and then there's no one who can accurately and in a way that they understand what's being said, report on it. So there's this giant, like, gap in communication. Not only, it's two things. It's that reporters have no idea what the fuck they're talking about, so they just write headlines that like completely misinterpret things. This is how I feel about political polls as well. And then also it's the fact that science is really fucking bad at branding, because we just care about accuracy and the truth. And so we're not, if we call something a theory, then everybody's going to be like, it's a theory. And it's like, yeah, their theories have been established for like years and years that you take as laws, but we call it theories because by the definition of a theory, that's what a theory is.
Terminology matters here. Yes.
Terminology matters. Representation. Where are we going? Okay. I'm sorry. Sometimes I just yell chance. But that's a thing that we have. That's a huge problem, is that we have this giant gap in scientific communication where we as scientists don't want to alter any of how we communicate. But in the end of it, the end result is that the solutions that people are trying to find aren't getting to them, or aren't getting to them in a productive way. So there's like a stopgap there where it's like, yeah, we can be as accurate as we want in labs, but it doesn't mean shit if we can't get policy implemented to where people like actually use it. Right. This is a huge problem in industry and stuff, where they just create products that sit on shelves for years. But they're like, they have it. They have that patent or whatever. So it's not benefiting anybody. Right. But they have it in case they need it. Right. So I don't know. It's just, it's a hard thing to explain to people. And I think it's the crux of, like, the mistrust in the system, other than, like, you know, the system being, like, racist and shit. But, like, but it's, like, a huge part of it. The mistrust is just the ability to be, like, hey, like, when we say this, we really mean this. It's a branding issue, you know?
No, and I mean, this is why they need to start hiring people like us who just do the branding part. Well, not you. You do the science and the branding part. People like me and Wen.
I don't know. That Spartacus story went off the rails real fast.
By the way, Wen knows the more he mentioned this, the harder it's going to be for me to cut later on.
Specifically why I brought it back up.
Are you talking about the Spartacus story? Is that what you're talking about?
God damn it. Spartacus is staying in.
Cool.
This sucks. All right.
but even, this is another thing. Even science communicators, like, we still have issues with them, right? Like, sure. Even things like that, because of, like, how closely people want to stick to accuracy. So even things that, like, bless his soul, Bill Nye has said, you know, some people, like, disagree with, like, how he said a certain thing or whatever. But it's like, I don't know. There's got to be, like, a compromise between it. Now more than ever, you have to inform people, and you have to make it, like, palatable, and you have to make it easily consumable. So it's like, some things, you know, as you're teaching, like, young kids, you know, you can't teach them all the details. Some things have to be, like, not included or whatever initially, as people are, like, getting used to a topic.
And I think a big part of this issue too is just how hard it is to explain some of this stuff to people that don't have 8 years of schooling and then training beyond it, which is why, you know, Richard Feynman famously would not explain anything that he could not explain to someone who didn't have a background in it.
Not even his affairs.
There is no one safe from Pallavi in this episode.
I went to Caltech. I know all the drama.
Honey, I would love to tell you what's going on here, but you do not have a background in sleeping around, and therefore I cannot explain myself. Look, science just needs like a guy like me around so that they're like, stimulus-triggered acquisition of pluripotency. And then people are like, what does that mean? I'm like, it's bullying cells to make them good.
That's why I started a science web series that I have not added to since coronavirus, because I do not want to do that episode. But I had one, and it was aimed at adults, because I'm like, the kids, like, they're actually, like, way more informed than adults are, because adults have forgotten everything except the great viral tweet about the powerhouse of the cell. Like,
right.
Everybody knows the term.
There we go, buddy.
Yes! But everybody knows, like, these, like, random terms, but they've forgotten, like, the scientific method. So that's why I think it's, like, important to aim stuff. Everything is aimed at kids, and yes, it is, like, consumable by adults, but they're not, like, don't always take everything in that's, like, marketed towards kids. But I think it's really important because adults vote.
Adults
are the ones not vaccinating their children. Like, adults are so important. And for me, I feel very lucky that I'm able to, like, read scientific articles and understand them, because I never fucking read just the headlines that reporters have, because I'm like, this is all bullshit. Give me the data. And that takes so long to, like, understand how to read articles in your field, let alone somewhere else, you know?
Absolutely. And yeah, I mean, I think this is a complex issue, especially if you don't know what it is to begin with, and realizing that the depth of scientific fields, it's, you know, oh, you're a scientist, you must know about all of science is not a thing. You know, you've got your areas.
Watson, molecular biologist, still within biology, did not understand neuroscience enough to know that black people don't have different brains than other people. Fucking racist piece of shit.
Okay, we're going to get this out of the way right now. Here's where it went wrong. The podcast is against phrenology. We are anti-phrenology.
I changed my mind. I want that to be the intro music.
All right, I
just love Wen's voice.
And Wen, as always, has summed up the issue so perfectly that I think that covers it for today. What we love about this is the peer review process, is science as a whole. What we hate is the abuse of the system when it falls through the cracks. The Yoshiki Sasai scandal was obviously the base of all of this. But in general, it seems like a lot of the issue is just lack of education. And we would love for everyone to do better at that, which hopefully this podcast helped with. But despite that, we have reached our next segment, which Pallavi has volunteered to do at this time, in their defense, where she has to defend everything we have just trashed for the last hour. Pallavi, what do you think?
I forgot about this part. Okay. listen, fucking science is hard and we don't always know what we're doing. Like, we're just trying and there's like a lot of pressure, guys. And like, I just need to tell my Asian parents that I did well in school, okay? Because even though I'm an adult, they're still looking at my accomplishments. And how am I supposed to, as a woman, get married if I'm not published and then have to change my name and then have it be published under a different name? This is me speaking in Obokata twice right now. No, but in her defense, not a lot, but let's say there was more mentorship and people paying attention and questioning her and not taking her seriously. Maybe this would have been stopped.
That, I think the big takeaway here is that, listen, guys, science is fucking hard.
It's so hard, guys. It's now our promo for this episode. My brain hurts. I'm like, I've done science for so long, and it's the thing I'm most insecure about. Because like, whenever I talk to, because there's ways that like good scientists speak, and like even just about regular subjects, and you're like, oh, like you show a, like a, an inquisitiveness and a depth of knowledge that indicates that you've had practice with the scientific method and questioning things in a certain specific and rational and logical step kind of way. And I'm always like, is my ass showing around these guys? Like, am I saying the right, am I asking the right question? Do they, and whenever anybody, we're also trying to, because of this communication issue, we're also trying to like over explain things and like take it step by step for people. So good scientists are also very good at simplifying things down, but I always take that as an insult. So that's not good.
What, do you think I'm dumb?
You think I'm a fucking,
I got a PhD.
Yeah, I don't have one and I still don't understand what you're saying, but I wish you thought I was smarter than
you got a master's? That's a PhD to people who are me. That's
technically I have two masters because I had a master's before and then I got a redundant master's because I quit my PhD, and that's what they give you when they feel bad for you. Which other people who earned their master's do not like to hear.
Yeah, people don't like to hear about the participation master's that they're
the participation trophy. They did give it to me with a bunch of sliced oranges. That's weird.
Phil, thank you so much for being on, Pallavi, for walking us through this, for explaining this process to us, and hopefully educating our audience who may or may not have known anything about this. I thought this was a fascinating case. And
educating
this is
our host, too, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, as always, I love the research. This was a lot to learn about.
Listen, I have so much more to say about Feynman, but we'll get into that.
Yeah. All right, next episode is just fucking Feynman.
Where did his dick go wrong? Not going to talk about physics at all.
Also, another thing in the scientific community is just how much these top guys got laid. Like,
dude,
there is
Stephen
a rock star.
Stephen Hawking.
Stephen Hawking getting as laid as he did was probably my favorite part of the theory of everything.
He went to Cal. Like, I have a picture with him. He would come to Caltech and he would give speeches to Caltech students because he was there like 4 months out of the year. And so we like went to dinner with him and stuff. But he was fucking pulled, dude. Like, Stephen Hawking didn't, like, he fucking pulled, man. He had groupies and shit. I was like, damn, that's another reason why people want to publish. Maybe she just wanted to get laid, dude. Like, it's like stand-up comedians, we got to perform. Scientists, we got to get published. It's a whole...
That's it. So many parallels here. This is basically the same job that we had before.
Everyone's just trying to get laid.
That's it.
That's all human achievement has been in the history of mankind.
I wanna like take a poll of just asexuals in every industry and see how successful they are compared to like the horniest people. Like who is people who are unaffected by sexual influence or like drive or whatever, or people who are the most affected? Like, are the horniest people more successful?
This is being. I cannot wait for this one to get published. This is so...
If you would like to join my study, please DM me.
Sign to my DMs and tell me
please
how horny
DM
you
me.
Are.
Please don't DM me. Please don't. Oh, please don't do that.
All Well, I can't imagine there's anything left to say beyond that. That should cover it for the episode on peer review, the Yoshiki Sasai scandal, and the absolute abuse of the system. And we have another wonderful episode coming up for you next week. Wend, what do we have next week?
Next week, we have Nicole Thurman. You may know her from The Opposition, Black Lady Sketch Show, the new show Hot Dog on
HBO Max.
Just
wrote for the Emmys?
Yeah, she just wrote for the Emmys.
I love her on Twitter.
She's fantastic.
She's
absolutely
so fun.
Everywhere.
And we're going to talk to her about dating and where that went wrong.
And there's a lot. It turns out we dove into the whole history of the personal ad for this one because that was something I could do. So yeah, please tune in next week. If you enjoy this, please give it 5 stars and subscribe. It helps us out so much. And we will see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.